Relationship Podcast with your host, certified life coach, Chris Rich. If you're having trouble navigating your mixed faith relationships, struggling to connect with your people, or having specific challenges, you are in the right place, my friend. Episode 90, Trauma 101, with special guest Leah Davidson. Hello there, my beautiful friends, and happy Valentine's Day. I hope that today is amazing for you and you get to feel all the love. And I just want to throw it out there how much I love that you guys are here listening to the podcast. Speaking of love, you are going to love my guest that I have on today. I met Leah Davidson at, well, I became aware of her. I think I met her for like 2 seconds just saying hi. She was presenting to a massive group of life coaches, like thousands of life coaches. And I just loved everything that she shared. And I started listening to her podcast and I love it. So I was telling her that I already feel like she's my BFF because I've listened to so many of her podcasts. I haven't got through all of them, but lots of them. And I knew that she would be an awesome person to have on the podcast. She is a specialist in trauma. And in mixed faith relationships, this is definitely something. It may be the spouse that stays in the church. Maybe they feel like they've experienced trauma, or on the other side, it could be the person that left, whether that be a spouse or a child, they may be experiencing trauma. So I just thought she's the perfect person to have. And nothing says happy Valentine's like trauma. So welcome, Leah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And actually, it is true. Nothing says happy Valentine's like trauma, because when we think of what we need to heal from trauma, a lot of love and a lot of connection. So it is perfect antidote to be talking about it on Valentine's Day. So there is hope if you've experienced trauma, and light, love, connection will lead the way.
I love that. So see, we knew it. We knew it was going to work.
We knew it. It's a perfect day.
Well, Leah, tell us a little bit about yourself, like who you are personally and also what you do in your business.
Absolutely. So again, my name is Leah Davidson. I am a life coach and I am also a speech language pathologist. And that is where my journey with the brain, so to speak, started. I've been practicing speech pathology for the past 25 years and specializing in the area of traumatic brain injury. And so it was through that line of work that I gained an understanding of the importance of the brain, what happens when things go wrong with the brain, what happens when the brain is traumatized. As well, it led me into a deeper dive into the nervous system, because the nervous system is really the foundation upon which everything is built. The nervous system is the communication between the brain and the body. So as a result of that, I really do specialize in nervous system resilience. I teach an advanced training program for people who want to do a deep dive into their nervous system, or for coaches and helping professionals who want to add these tools, this foundational work into their work with people. I teach that. And I have a few things up my sleeve of ways that I'm going to be expanding to a broader reach, because I really think that the nervous system is a missing piece for many of us. And it's certainly important when we are talking about trauma, because they go hand in hand. I know often people talk about being trauma informed. I like to talk about being nervous system informed, because that encompasses trauma. And then on a personal level, I am from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I am married to a wonderful man going on 16 years. It's the second marriage for both of us. We have a blended family of 5 kids. They are all in their 20s, except for one. 3 who are married. They all are leading ridiculously amazing lives and ridiculously hard lives, because that's the 50-50 of life. So that's a little bit about me.
I love that. I was just, so with Come Follow Me this year, we've been reading the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite scriptures is 1 Nephi 1:1, where Nephi talks about he is highly favored. of the Lord, and he has seen many afflictions. And I'm like, yeah, that's 50-50 right there.
That's right. Right there. Right at the beginning, it tells you life is going to be 50-50. And I truly have experienced that in my life. And I think all my kids would probably say they've experienced that in their life too. And everyone around me. And I think that's what it is to be human. We have our adversities and challenges and traumas. We also have healing and connection and love. And
look, yeah, every single human. I think that's, yes. I think that's the norm for all of us.
That's right.
So Leah, I want you to like, give us, I want like the basics, like the 101. So let's define trauma. What is trauma?
Yeah. So trauma for many people, they think of it as an event. They'll think of it as something bad happens. So we will experience maybe an earthquake, a fire, abuse. These are things that people think is what trauma is. And while you can experience trauma from all these things, and we'll talk more about how to label them in a minute, trauma is actually the response that we have as an individual. Trauma is what happens inside you, to you, when things are occurring externally or things or situations or other people. So trauma is essentially when you experience something or someone and your nervous system is not able to cope with it. It's not able to handle it. It's not able to digest what is going on, and it will get stuck. It will get stunted. It will get stuck in what we'll call a place of dysregulation, where we can get stuck in activation, so high energy, or stuck in more of a collapse mode. So trauma is the response. Now, years ago, people started to, you know, we're trying to differentiate because trauma has gone through many sort of definitions. And the things that I described earlier, these events, were labeled as what we would call big T trauma. These are the things that normally when people experience war, sexual abuse, physical abuse, you know, natural disasters, accidents, they will experience, they will get stuck. And they will experience like post-traumatic stress disorder, which then medically gets diagnosed. So they would call them big T trauma. But what therapists and in the world of the medical world at that time, I guess, were noticing is that some people were having symptoms that they would have described as like PTSD, post-traumatic stress, but didn't have these big T traumas. And as they started digging deeper, they started to notice, wait a second, there are different kinds of trauma. Yes, there is like the acute, where there's a big one-time event that happens and that traumatizes you. But there's also little things, and I am definitely using air quotes when I say little things, because they're little because that's just how we've defined them, but they're not little to the response that you're having. And that could include, you know, bullying or being neglected or going through infidelity or going through a divorce, or there's so many quote unquote little things where people's nervous systems are not able to handle, especially if it's like chronic stress on an ongoing basis. And so that in itself, we start to see having people having trauma. So you'll hear people talk about big T and little T trauma, yeah. And that's what they're referring to. They're referring to these different categories. Is it super helpful to have labels like that? I think it's super helpful because we like labels because it helps us give us some language of, oh, I kind of know what you're talking about when you say big T versus little T. Not super helpful in thinking that we can then understand what happened to the person, what is going on inside the person. There are people who go through quote unquote big T trauma and don't experience trauma. And there are many people who will go through certain events with little t, and it tremendously impact their life. So it really is all about the response, and it is all about the person's nervous system and how they responded to that event.
I find that so fascinating. I was sharing with you earlier that I worked with a therapist, and I think I've shared this before on my podcast, that on the intake questions, she said, "Have you ever experienced any trauma?" And I was like, "No." And then as we started talking, she was like, "Sweetie, I think this is probably what is," and I don't know that she had the same definition of this, but it was fascinating to, you know, like my brother died by suicide when I was 14. My mom died when I was 25, and she was always really sick. And those things were hard for me. And then when my husband left the church, that was like, this was just like a huge thing for me. And she was like, all of these things are, whether it's capital T or lowercase t.
Yes.
So it was
absolutely
so fascinating. So how do we know? Well, a couple of different questions. How do we know if we have experienced trauma?
Yeah. Well, make the assumption, first of all, that you have. It's just we don't know what different levels and what degrees. If you're human, you've experienced trauma. If you have a, if you've grown up and gone to high school, you've experienced trauma. But usually indicators are that you are stuck in a dysregulated state. And this is where the nervous system comes in, and understanding the nervous system. So maybe just to answer a question, I'll give a quick 101 of the nervous system.
Yeah, let's do it.
The nervous system is essentially the way that the brain and the body communicate with each other. It's the connections. It's all the collection of fibers go back and forth. The nervous system has certain roles. And one role is, and we're talking about the autonomic nervous system here. So there's branches. So the autonomic nervous system, the role is to run all the behind the scenes of you, your breathing, your digestion, your heart rate, everything. It's taking care of that. It is also responsible for your survival. And because it's responsible for your survival, it is constantly scanning for safety and danger. And so all the time, it's looking at cues that are happening outside of you. So what's going on in the world? It's looking around in the environment. It's looking at cues that are going on inside of you. Like it's listening. Is my heart beating a little faster? Do I have a little stomach pain? Do I have tension in my body? And what's going on between us? So you and I right now, we're sort of assessing each other, you know, like, do we feel safe with you? Does it feel dangerous? Based on that, it's like this radar, the nervous system will make an assignment, so to speak, to your physiology. If you feel safe, then it will assign you into a state of safety. And this is where you just, we call it regulated. This is where you are resilient. You can handle things. This is also a place of connection. So we can communicate with each other. We can connect with each other. I have access to all these, you know, characteristics, like I can have confidence and curiosity and compassion, and I have access to all my thinking skills. Mm-hmm. I have access to, I call her my CEO, the you know, my executive function skills. She's running the show. I have access to her when I'm nice and calm and I'm in a place that I feel safe and connected. But if the nervous system detects danger, because it's in charge of survival, it is basically saying, all right, you're in danger. I got to protect you. How am I going to protect you? Well, the first line of defense to protect you is I am going to start getting you mobilized, because if you're in danger, you better be ready to run. You better be ready to take care of yourself. And so you'll start feeling the energy rising in your body. And this means that you will be ready to flee or to fight. That's where that fight flight response comes on. Now, if the nervous system senses either you've been in that state of activation for too long, or it's sensing this is really bad, this is really dangerous, it will put you into another disconnected state, a protective state of a hypo-aroused state. And this is where it's more a state of shutdown. is a state of collapse. And this is where you have less energy. You're there to conserve your energy. So I refer to these as when you're placed in that safety zone, it's team resilient because you're able to handle life. If you are activated, it's team hyper. And if you are underactivated, it is team hypo. So those are the three main states. There's other mixed states, but we won't get into that. So that's like a quick 101 of the nervous system. Now with trauma, what happens is at some point there was danger. And because of that danger, we get assigned a state and likely go up into team hyper or down into team hypo. Yeah. Now, the curious thing about our nervous system and our survival brain, which is essentially it's all running together, is we don't know the difference between a real threat and a perceived threat. We also don't know the difference between past and present. And this becomes problematic because the nervous system is highly sensitive, but it can be highly inaccurate. It can start making decisions like this is a dangerous situation, you're about to die, when actually you're not. But because the nervous system has placed you into that zone of dysregulation, that team hyper, you will go up there. Trauma happens when you are assigned a dysregulated state. And you're stuck there. You either don't have the capacity, you don't know how to go back, you don't have the connection, you don't have the skills. So you get assigned in this dysregulated state, which means that your whole body and brain is functioning in this dysregulation. With trauma as well, because all throughout our life, our nervous system is being developed. It starts when we're in utero, continued when we're babies, all throughout. We have like these impressions all the way along our nervous system. And what can happen is we get into a state where our little, little Leah couldn't handle that then. So she created some adaptations to help her out. And sometimes they're helpful and sometimes they're not helpful. Well, later on in life, what can happen is certain things can get triggered that bring me right back to that moment. And my nervous system responds as if I was in that dangerous situation that I had previously. So much of what we are experiencing is a reflection of things that have happened in the past. We weren't able to handle it. We get stuck. And so trauma is essentially getting stuck in dysregulated states. And to answer your question, because I've been going on and on, how do you know if you've experienced trauma? That you're living in a dysregulated state. So people on team hyper, maybe they're going to have a lot more aggression or anxiety or overthinking or chronically busy. A press for time, a feeling of constant worry. That's when they're in team hyper. When they're in team hypo, they may feel things like hopeless, sad, depressed, helpless. There is also, people will go back and forth, and there's something that's called a mixed state. And a mixed state is where you kind of feel both. You feel like the gas pedal is on and the brakes. So I'm like going, but I'm completely numb and dissociated. So when you feel these are sort of the symptoms of dysregulation, that's an indicator that you're having a trauma response. A trauma response is when you're stuck in team hyper, stuck in team hypo, or stuck in that in between of freeze.
Okay, so let's say you're noticing like that's where I am. Mm-hmm. So what do we do?
Yeah. I think the first thing is the awareness of what's going on. That's always the first step. Most people aren't aware. Most people, that's like the most eye-opening thing. Like, oh my gosh, I just thought I was an anxious person. I just thought I was like a chronically busy, or I was frustrated or irritable, without realizing that there's maybe a little bit more to this. This is maybe an adaptation that I created throughout my life in order to cope with different things that happened to me. So I think awareness is really key. And the second piece is that awareness with no shame and no blame. What you experienced and being assigned to different states, your trauma response, it's a biological response. It's not a choice. It's not a cognitive thing that, oh, I'm going to do this. This is just our wiring. This is what our nervous system has done to protect us. So we have been protected by our responses. So removing that shame and the blame, and that's why it is important that if you do start experiencing and you notice these things, it is really helpful that you find yourself some professional support that they can walk you through and provide a very, very safe container for you to start unpacking. And when I say unpacking, you don't necessarily have to go back and revisit and rehash all the experiences that you've had in the past. For some people, that may be required, in which case you really want to make sure that the professional you work with is, you know, licensed with trauma therapy. They have all the resources. But for many people, what has been missing in their life is safety. They have not been able to feel safe. And so what the work involves primarily is learning how to befriend your nervous system, get to know when you're activated, get to know what your symptoms are, and learn how to regulate yourself back into that zone of safety. Regulate yourself back to where you're able to experience some of the emotions and thoughts and actions that can take place in that zone of resilience is what I call it. It's essentially safety. We need to confront all the triggers that we have in life from a place of being safe, from a place of being in a relaxed body, knowing that we are safe. And if we can confront these triggers from safety and relaxation, we change the relationship with things. We start rewiring our brain. We start rewiring our nervous system. Just to give you an example of what I mean is, say you were bitten by a dog when you were younger. It makes sense that later on in life, even if you don't remember the details of being bitten by a dog, your nervous system remembers it. It has an imprint of it. So you may see a dog coming at you and go into a state of, ah, oh my gosh, and start freaking out, get activated. So you're having that response. Part of what we can do is we can start learning how to be with dogs where we don't have that response. So, and we're not going to like throw somebody into, you know, a pound of dogs, but we may start with, you know, why don't you meet a dog who is a cute little puppy and you're 5 feet away, and we practice like relaxing your body, reminding yourself that you're safe. Now you have a new experience with a dog where you felt calm, where you felt safe, and then you go from there. It's not, but it's very slow. Like, you've got to start moving very slowly with things.
This, as you're talking, I keep thinking of different examples where, like in a mixed faith marriage, I think that's probably one of the tricky things. I know for me, when my husband first said, "I'm done with this. I don't want to do this anymore," it felt like, I think of it as having the rug just ripped out from under me. Like, the, what about my eternal family? What if he starts doing this? And as I talk to my clients, there's so many things where, you know, people talk about, they're worried about alcohol. Maybe they've had some experiences with alcohol in the past. And then their spouse says, "Hey, I want to start drinking," or they find out they have been, or just, I think that big, as you're sharing all this, I just keep thinking of that. There's so many times in a mixed faith relationship where we don't feel safe, or maybe it's with our child, we find out that they're having sex before they get married, or all these things that our brains are just like, ah, this isn't.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think sometimes people might say something like, I've heard people, well, now you're just rationalizing it and you're, you know, allowing excuses. And no, what you're doing is you're allowing time for your nervous system to get used to an idea while still sending yourself messages of safety. So maybe the first time you stumble across a drink that is, you know, that your spouse has had would be very, very activating. But the more that you learn, like, hey, you know what? My safety is not at risk here. And then all those things, like I'm sure with your clients, you do talk about mindset and making decisions of what your thoughts are going to be. Like, just because somebody drinks doesn't mean they're a bad person, and all those different thoughts that they can have. You can't access your thoughts. You can't access your CEO when you're dysregulated. So if somebody doesn't feel safe, it's going to be very difficult for them to try to come up with thoughts that will serve them much better, their relationship better, serve everything about them when they're dysregulated, which is why, like when I work with people, the first thing we always need to establish is safety. And when we can establish, and that can take a long time for some people, but when we establish safety, sometimes, first of all, things just melt away. You're not as worried about things anymore because you're just like, you know what? I feel safe with myself. I feel safe with my body.
I love what you taught us. I don't remember. I think it was from Mastermind. Those three.
Yeah.
Can you share those three questions?
Yes.
So like you're freaking out thinking.
Yeah.
The world is ending.
And this is the key. And I say to people, if you could just learn this and integrate it into your life, this is what the challenge is. It's hard to integrate it. But essentially what happens is if you remember you're scanning for safety and danger, more often than not, your brain, your nervous system is going to identify danger. And when you're in danger, your body has a response. And so we start getting activated. And then we actually don't know the difference between real danger and perceived danger. So one of the things is we've got to get the brain and the body in line with each other. And so I teach like a three-step approach. The first thing we need to do is we need to be checking to make sure that physically, empirically, I am safe. Because I don't want my stress response to be discarded if I'm actually in danger. I need to be activated if I'm in danger. So the first thing we do is we have to stop everything. I put my hand to my heart and ask, am I safe in this space, in this present moment? Not, will I be safe in 5 minutes from now? Or was I safe 5 minutes ago? No, in this moment. So if we are doing this together right now, I'd say I am sitting here and I'd go through, look around. I'm staring at my computer screen. I'm sitting on my desk chair. I have a blanket on my lap. I am safe. I know empirically. So that's trying to use my CEO to send the message to my body. Listen, I've checked it out. We're all good. But then the body is communicating back. The body's like, my heart is pounding. My stomach feels, I have tension. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I do not feel safe. I do not feel safe at all. So the next question is, do I feel safe? And the majority of the time, the answer is going to be no.
No.
I know I am safe, but I don't feel safe. And these two questions can be interchanged because sometimes people feel it in their body very, very quickly first. So do I feel safe? No. And you're just going to scan your body. Where is it? Okay, I have some tension. You want to get to know, we call this interoception. Get to know what's going on inside your body. All right, so I don't feel safe, but I know that I am safe cognitively and empirically. And then the next thing I'm going to do is relax my body. And what I shared with you at the mastermind is I do what's called the ragdoll, where I literally just let all the muscles in my body completely relax. Now, if I am sitting at the dining room table with my family, I can be doing these things. I just may not completely relax like a rag doll, but I may sort of lean back in my chair, put my arms by my side, let my shoulders drop. I may have a nice slow breath and exhalation. When my body is relaxed, my CEO can come back on board. Now we are in alignment, and I can start encountering all the stresses in my life from a place of a relaxed body. A relaxed body cannot house stress. If you relax your body, it is very difficult for you to feel stressed. I always give the example, because being a mom, try yelling at your kids from a ragdoll relaxed body. It does not work. When we want to yell at our kids, we get energy, like my veins pop out. There's tension, yeah. Pressure. So the more we can do this throughout the day, am I safe? Do I feel safe? Relax my body. The more we can go through life confronting all those scary threats that we have and relax our bodies with it, the more we can build our zone of safety and start feeling more empowered that we can handle things, because we're confronting all the things. We're not avoiding things in life. We're just changing our relationship with them. I'm coming at all these perceived threats with the relaxed body. And so it almost like helps melt away all of that stress.
I remember the first time I heard you say that a relaxed body couldn't house stress. It was just like mic drop moment for me. Just like, wait, say that again. What? Yeah, I think that's, okay. There's so much, I could ask you 10 million questions about all this. So I think we hit on just a little bit about like when our partner leaves or our child leaves the church, that those, our brain thinks we're in danger. So I love that, those three steps to be like, okay. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to still have all the thoughts and all the emotions, because those definitely are going to come up with that. I think the point is just like, we need to be able to, if we want to be able to think about who we want to be and how we want to show up, we need to be able to relax, to get into that. The other thing that I want to talk about, just, we don't have a lot of time, but what about, I know a lot of my clients have shared that their spouse has felt religious trauma, or maybe their child has left the church. Maybe they've even said like, mom and dad, you did this to me. I am traumatized. Let's talk about that for just a minute.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, it's something that's, it's a very real experience for many people. I think that we have to come back to what our definition of trauma is. And our definition of trauma is really a response to something that's going on around us. It's interesting that not all people within the same religion will have experienced religious trauma. That does not mean that some people are right and some people are wrong. It simply means that some people have had a response to their religion, to how they were raised, to what was going on in their life. And I think we want to be, you know, very compassionate in understanding that everybody has their own experience. So, you know, I feel like sometimes people are quick to dismiss people who have had religious trauma, like, oh, it's such a trendy thing to be talking about. And no, this is very much their experience. And their experience is very real to them. At the same time, when other people haven't experienced religious trauma, I think we have to be careful not to brush it off. Well, they're just not enlightened. They just have their head under, you know, the shell. They just come from a different background. I think, yeah, we all come from different backgrounds. We all have unique systems. I like to think of, and they talk about this in trauma sometimes, we all come in with different infrastructures. You can think of it like a city. You know, I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I remember a couple of years ago, Texas was slammed with, you know, a cold front and an ice storm. And you're in Boston, so I know you have similar weather to, or you're in Massachusetts. So I know you have similar weather. But I remember thinking like, ugh, Texas, like, give me
What's
a
your
break.
Problem?
What is their problem? Like that is nothing for a Canadian winter. And in Toronto is mild. I grew up in Montreal. Let me tell you, Montreal is bad for winter. But that's not the point. The same storm can absolutely devastate a different city based on the infrastructure, based on different patterns. So if we look at that, based on somebody's nervous system, their personality, just their genetic makeup, there's so many different things that get involved that when a storm hits, it may not impact one city, but it could devastate another city. So we have to be careful in just being sensitive that people's experiences are based on their infrastructure. And I'm not meaning that in judgmental way that, oh, one infrastructure is better versus another. No, because certain things Montreal wouldn't be able to
Different.
handle versus we're all just different. We have different experiences. We have different genetics. We grew up in different environments. You know, some people who experienced trauma had no religion in their life and find religion and find that that's, you know, helpful for their love and connection piece. So I think it's very real. We need to honor people's experiences and we need to be willing to listen. And we certainly need to be sitting from a place of compassion, knowing that while this may not be my experience, it doesn't invalidate that that's their experience. And their experience is their truth. My experience is mine, and it does not invalidate my experience either.
I think that is so important. I think that's where, because it's so easy, if someone comes to you and says, "This is your fault. The reason I'm going through all this is because of what you did." And I think the just that whole being able to look at it with compassion. So, compassion for ourselves on one part of it, going back to the love of Valentine's Day, having love for yourself and being like, "I am so sorry that that is your experience. How can I tell me all about it? How can I support you?" And I think it's so important that we, as parents or as spouses, as humans, we make everything about us, that we make it mean something terrible. I'm a terrible mom. I'm a terrible dad because, or a partner. And to be in that space of, like, okay, this is not my experience. This is your experience. How can I sit here with you? How can I help you? And to what do you need? What do you need to show up from that place of compassion and empathy and
And a lot of healing can take place when we do take accountability and we do take ownership, not necessarily take accountability. Oh, yeah, I did that too. Because I've heard sometimes, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, where your children will describe something and you're like, that totally wasn't the way it was. Like,
different story.
that different story. Like we must have been living in a different world. We must have been living in, but that is their perception. And so much of that makes up their reality. And so I don't want to discredit. You know, sometimes I do get defensive and I'm like, totally not what happened. Or I'll be like, well, you're harping on this. You seem to conveniently have forgotten this piece of your puzzle, especially, in my world, we come from a blended family. So there were two homes. So sometimes when, I feel the defensiveness of you're saying it's my home, like, look at what's going on over there. But the reality is this is their world. This is their perceptions. We don't even know half of what somebody experienced. They won't even really have a realization what was going on in classes and school and with coaches and other leaders. And we are a piece of their puzzle. And that is why I do think it's important to okay, that is your experience, and I'm willing to sit with you. At the same time, it doesn't serve you once you hit a certain age, really recognizing, well, what happened to you in the past was not your fault. And, our nervous system is created and people make mistakes along the way. And sometimes they're bigger mistakes than other mistakes. But as an adult, it becomes your responsibility to seek out the healing. And sometimes that may mean, leaving a religion or cutting certain people out of your life, or embracing other people, or getting certain kinds of help and going to therapy. I don't know what your solution to healing is. I think healing is very, very individual. It's not fair for any of us to say, you have to stay in the church, you have to leave the church, you have to talk to this person, you have to accept this, you have to go to this. I think we're on our own unique experience. And we do have responsibility for our own experience. And we can invite people to learn different ways that could be helpful in their healing, but accept that there's not a set perfect path for everybody to have. You know, my path may include these things, but your path may not.
And I love that, and I will walk that path, even though we're on different paths. I'm right here with you, and we can connect and love and heal
right.
together. I think it's fascinating how one of the first things you said, that as humans, we've all experienced trauma in totally different ways. But I think that's, something to.
And we can have compassion with it. And having compassion doesn't mean we have to have gone through the exact same thing as somebody else has. Having compassion just means, like, I may not understand what you're going through, but I'll sit with you and you can share it with me.
Yeah.
And I'm just here. I'm here for it all. I'm here for all of you.
I love that. Oh, Leah, I could talk to you for 20 more hours.
I don't know if our listeners will want to, if your listeners will want to listen to us.
They're like, okay, we're done. Leah, is there any last thoughts that you want to share before we wrap things up?
I think the only thing, I'm just going to advocate for that nervous system of yours, that if, you know, we all have a nervous system. Most of us don't know what it's for and how to use it and how to befriend it. So take some time, get to know your nervous system, because I think it really holds the key to much of our healing. And as we heal, we also need connection. We heal when we are connected with people. So the more we get to know our own nervous system, the more it gives us insight to other people's nervous system, the more it brings us to places of compassion and curiosity and connection and love. So I really, you know, if you're looking at a way, how do I connect with the people around me that I love? Get to know your nervous system. That's a great place to start.
I love that. Love, love, love it. Okay. If people want to learn more about you, where do they find you?
I am on Instagram and Facebook at Leah Davidson Life Coaching. And I have a podcast called the Building Resilience Podcast, where I talk all about these things. I actually have a free download, it's called the Roadmap for Nervous System Resilience, where I just lay out what the top episodes of my podcast are so that you can learn more about your nervous system, because I have a lot of different episodes. So these are the ones that you can zero in on just to get an introduction to the nervous system.
I love it. And I am working my way through your podcast, and they're seriously amazing. So
awesome. I'm so glad. I appreciate you.
Oh, Leah, this has been so informative and helpful for me. And I know that my listeners, that they've been able to, this will be helpful for them as well. And I just so appreciate you being here and for sharing all your goodness.
And thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Happy Valentine's, everyone. That's everything we have for you. Make a great week. Mwah. You don't have to be on the same page with religion to have a great relationship. If you are feeling stuck in all the emotions that are coming up for you in your mixed faith relationships, or are looking for tools to help you move forward, I can help you. Sign up for a free session with me. Go to chrisrichcoaching.com and click on Work With Me, because you and your loved ones are worth it, my friend.